To listen to Business Movers 1 week early and ad-free, join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app. Download the Wondery app in your Apple or Google Play mobile app store today. It's January 2006 at the fashionable Chez Panisse restaurant in Berkeley, California. HP director Jay Keyworth is lunching with Don Kawamoto, a journalist for the online tech news outfit CNET. Jay and Don met 5 years ago when HP's PR team sent Jay and other board members to promote Carly Fiorina's Compaq merger to the media. The two have spoken frequently on the phone in the intervening years, but this is the first time they've met in person. Jay's recently returned from an intense annual retreat with the HP board, and he's ready to unwind. So, Jay, how was it? You take the hike I recommended?
No, I did not. They kept us so busy, we didn't finish until 10 p.m. most nights.
And you spent all that time on HP business?
Yeah, we did. Mark has a lot of exciting plans and wanted to get our input.
How are you liking your new CEO?
Well, I'll tell you this much. A Mark Hurd retreat is very different from a Carly Fiorina retreat.
Oh, I bet. You mind me asking what kind of things you discussed?
This is not an innocent question. Don is probing for inside information for a story. Jay knows he's not supposed to discuss internal company business with members of the media. But Jay likes Don. When his wife Polly died, Don was a long-distance shoulder to cry on. And so even though he's not supposed to discuss privileged matters outside the boardroom, he does.
Yeah, well, it's no secret Dell's killing us. So we're going to have to get our online ordering system up to speed, too. And we're going to look at swapping out our reliance on Intel.
At this, Don perks up.
Oh, wow, that's a big move. Intel's a huge part of your business.
Yeah, but they're too slow. Too many delays in manufacturing, and honestly, I don't know how they get away with it. So we're looking to see if we can make a change.
Now that Dawn has Jay talking, she keeps digging.
Any truth to the rumor that Mark is going to sell off the printer division?
No. No, Mark has made it clear to us that no part of HP is up for sale.
Wall Street says HP has too wide of a portfolio, though. If Carly couldn't make it work, what makes you think Mark can?
Well, everything is much more streamlined now. When Mark started, he discovered there was 11 layers of management between him and the customer. 11. And that's crazy. Mark's sorting it out, and I'm behind him on that.
Oh, these are interesting changes. Maybe the industry was wrong to peg him as just an operations guy.
You know, it really bugs me how Mark's characterized as this bean counter, someone with no vision or strategic ability. It's just not true. He can do it all.
Oh, does that include taming the notoriously volatile HP board?
Jay smirks. He's willing to talk, but not about that. So he gives a calculated reply.
Oh, absolutely. We are all behind Mark 100%.
On January 23, 2006, CNET published a story co-written by Don Kawamoto titled HP Outlines New Long-Term Strategy. In it, Don laid out the substance of her conversation with Jay. The question of whether Jay actively leaked information or whether he thought he was speaking confidentially to a friend off the record remains the source of much debate. But it is clear that Jay was not supposed to be talking to a reporter about confidential HP business and did it anyway. Jay's decision to sit down with Don would have far-reaching consequences. That conversation would light a fire that would engulf nearly everyone on the HP board, including its chairman, Patty Dunn.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
From Wondery, I'm Lindsey Graham. and this is Business Movers. At the time the CNET story was published, no one at HP knew for certain that Jay was the source, including Patty. But Patty hardly had time to react to the first leak before she was confronted with a second one. Just 1 week after the CNET story, the Wall Street Journal revealed more confidential information, reporting that HP was in secret talks to buy a $9 billion computer firm called CSC. That news story alone saw shares in CSC leap 8% on the New York Stock Exchange, potentially making any acquisition much more expensive. Patty was losing patience with the continued leaks. She felt they undermined CEO Mark Hurd's plans and negotiations and poisoned the culture of the company, as she would later explain in an interview with CBS's 60 Minutes.
The idea that the most sensitive discussions of the board would end up on the front page of the Wall Street Journal was destructive. It destroyed the trust between people. And if they don't trust each other, they can't function as a board.
After the 1-2 punch of the CNET and Wall Street Journal stories, Mark Hurd decided enough was enough. He instructed Patty to revive the previous leak investigation that had long since fizzled out. The original investigation had been codenamed Kona. Patty would call the new one Kona 2. But Patty Dunn did not trust HP Security, the company's internal team. Their lack of success during Kona 1 had done little to build her faith and confidence. And so in the aftermath of the most recent leaks, Patty went to HP's general counsel, Ann Baskins, and suggested that HP employ an outside firm of private investigators. But Ann dissuaded her, convincing her it was better to keep the investigation in-house. Reluctantly, Patty agreed. But from the very start, the Kona 2 investigation was a different beast to its predecessor. While Kona 1 had been conducted in a scattershot fashion, the second investigation was far more cohesive and ultimately devious. HP's security operation aimed to target journalists, board directors, and members of HP's PR team, employing a variety of surveillance techniques, including accessing phone records, searching targets' household trash for incriminating evidence, tailing key suspects, and even planting operatives as cleaners and admin staff into the offices of CNET and the Wall Street Journal. As it relates to the operations of Kona 2, the question of who knew what and when is not cut and dry. Most of the HP board would deny knowing the details of the security team's methods, including Patty Dunn. But the result of the investigation is clear to everyone. In just a matter of months, HP's security team would uncover evidence that pointed the finger of blame for the CNET leak at Jay Keyworth. Almost immediately, Patty would take corrective action. But her attempts to hold Jay accountable would put her at odds with another longtime adversary, Jay's frequent cohort, Tom Perkins. This is episode 3 in our 4-part series on the HP spying scandal, Natural Enemies. It's early March 2006 in the office of Kevin Hunsaker, HP's chief ethics director and a senior member of the firm's legal team. Kevin sits at his desk flipping through a stack of confidential documents. Normally, Kevin's job is to focus on employment law, but after the CNET story broke, he was placed in charge of overseeing the Kona 2 investigation. Kevin takes his work very seriously, so do his bosses. Kevin reports to Ann Baskins, HP's general counsel, who reports directly to the CEO, Mark Hurd. But this investigation has been long and frustrating. Despite his best efforts, Kevin's team had little to show for their work, until recently, when his team gained access to certain phone records. Today, as Kevin examines those records, his eyes go wide with excitement. Kevin picks up the phone and dials the global manager of the HP security team.
Hello, Gianluci here.
Tony, it's Kevin.
Kevin, what can I do for you?
Well, I'm looking at the latest from the investigative team. Have you seen this?
Yes, pretty interesting reading.
That is an understatement.
No kidding.
Listen, I'm seeing something here, though. Something big. And I'm wondering if you're seeing it, too.
Well, what do you think you're saying?
Well, Jay Keyworth called that reporter Don Kawamoto 14 times. 14? That's abnormal, right?
I would probably call that an irregular level of contact for anyone outside the PR department.
But then we've got Dawn calling Jay's wife's number in January of this year.
Yeah, I saw that too.
And then a 10-minute call from Jay's cell phone to Don's office just a few weeks ago, right around the time the article dropped.
Yeah, it paints a pretty explicit picture.
Hearing the head of HP Security confirm his suspicions, Kevin grows increasingly concerned. But it's not over the fact that board member Jay Keyworth might be the source of the leak. Tony, you know, our guy, the private contractor that got us this information?
Ron D'Elia.
Yeah, Ron. How did he get these phone records? Is it above board?
Well, you know, Kevin, I've worked with Ron for years. Sure, it's lawful.
Yeah, but this is a lot of very private information. How is he getting it?
Probably pretexting.
Pretexting?
Yeah, Ron can tell you better than me, but essentially he has an investigator call a phone company employee, and they give him a story over the phone, you know, like, hey, I'm working with this branch of this other different phone company, we need to confirm some records, you know, it's all, they're lying, but it's the phone company that gives the information willingly. HP Security's done this kind of thing before, and we've never had any issues in the past.
Oh.
What is it, Kevin? What's wrong?
I think I should not have asked you that question. As soon as Kevin heard Tony Gentilucci's explanation of pretexting, he knew something wasn't right. Kevin spent the next hour online researching pretexting, but what he found persuaded him that pretexting was a common, standard practice. Perhaps it was wishful thinking or willful ignorance. But after doing research, Kevin decided he had no reason to be concerned. But not everyone shared his view. Several members of the HP security team had already begun to express their doubts about pretexting, which they found a dubious method, unethical, and perhaps criminal. But Kevin largely ignored their concerns. Instead, he focused on gathering more evidence against Jay Keyworth. In a lengthy report prepared for his superiors, Kevin pointed the finger at Jay, but he played down the use of pretexting, merely describing it as a commonly used investigative technique. But in the wake of Kevin's report, Patty was not concerned with pretexting. She wanted to hold Jay Keyworth accountable, but her attempts to do so would set her on a collision course with her longtime rival, Silicon Valley legend and billionaire venture capitalist Tom Perkins. On March 12, 2006, Kevin emailed his report to Patty, Ann Baskins, and Mark Hurd. To all three of them, the next step was obvious. Jay Keyworth had to go. In spite of her many disagreements with Jay, Patty liked him as a person. Jay had been friendly and welcoming when Patty first joined the board of HP in 1998. But the arrival of Tom Perkins in 2002 changed all of that. Before long, Jay and Tom were united in their mutual belief that Patty, an investment banker, had no business sitting on the board of a tech company. Venture capitalist Tom had very little respect for investment bankers like Patty. Tom once called venture capitalists and investment bankers natural enemies. And Tom and Patty were very different people. Where Patty did things by the book, Tom often thought rules were meant to be broken. Patty and Tom also struggled to communicate. They rarely saw things eye to eye. And the situation with how to deal with Jay would be no different. After reading Kevin's report, Patty knew Jay couldn't remain on the board. Still out of respect for his long record of service, she hoped the process would be respectful and Jay would go quietly. But Tom Perkins had other plans. Tom had not yet read Kevin's report. No one had, except for Kevin and the three people whom he sent it to: Patty Dunn, chairman of the board, Ann Baskins, general counsel, and Mark Hurd, CEO. Officially, Tom didn't know his friend Jay had been identified as the CNET leaker. But in Tom's mind, it didn't matter who the leaker was. What mattered was that the board put the whole affair behind them. Not long after Kevin's report, Tom confronted Patty with a very specific demand, as she would later explain in an interview on 60 Minutes.
What Tom believed was that we would simply tell the leaker never to do it again. Then we would inform the board that we had identified the leaker, that he had confessed and agreed he would never do it again. Next item on the agenda.
Tom didn't want the leaker fired. He didn't even want the leaker's identity to be revealed to the rest of the board. Tom wanted Patty to privately and discreetly give the leaker a slap on the wrist and move on. Patty must have been wondering if Tom did know what was in Kevin's report. Perhaps Jay had told him what he had done. Or perhaps Tom had found out from someone on HP's security team. Whatever the case, it's not hard to imagine that Patty was suspicious that Tom's true agenda was not merely moving on, but rather protecting his friend Jay. But Patty Dunn had no intention of moving on. For her, the thought of burying this information and keeping it from the board seemed wrong. She felt that matters like these should not be hushed up, but instead brought into the light of day. Still, Patty did not want to provoke her longtime rival either. So when Tom confronted Patty, demanding that she and Mark wrap up the investigation and move on, Patty did her best to remain non-committal. But during this heated exchange, Patty and Tom's struggle with communication reared its head. Patty left the conversation believing she had promised to take Tom's wishes under advisement. Tom left believing Patty had promised to comply with his wishes. Before long, this misunderstanding would set the stage for a dramatic confrontation to come. In the wake of Kevin Hunsaker's report, Patty, CEO Mark Hurd, and HP's general counsel Ann Baskins all agreed Jay had to go. The only questions were how and when. The HP annual shareholder meeting at the Grand Hyatt in Los Angeles was set to take place in a few days' time. Mark decided it was best to wait till then. The extra few days would give them a chance to analyze the report and create a plan of action. When time for the shareholder meeting came, Mark, Patty, and Ann were in the Grand Hyatt Hotel's lounge for drinks, discussing Kevin Hunsaker's report. But as if on cue, Jay Keyworth walked into the bar. A few nervous glances were shared until finally Mark Hurd stood up and walked over to Jay, directing him to another table away from the others. As she nursed her drink, Patty watched Jay's face intently, looking for any clues or reactions. In their private conversation, Mark revealed to Jay that the CNET leaker had been positively identified. As Mark talked, Jay sat silent and stone-faced. During the brief exchange, Mark gave Jay ample opportunity to come clean and confess, but Jay didn't say a word. Eventually, Mark gave up and returned to his table empty-handed. Patty had hoped Jay would make their life easier by owning up and perhaps even offering his resignation. But after the conversation with Mark, it was clear to Patty that they were going to have to do this the hard way. Still, the hard way could also be the right way, and in accordance with good corporate practices. Patty agreed with Mark and Ann that Jay's fate should be decided in an open session of the board. Ordinarily, matters like these would be routed through the governance committee. But with Tom Perkins as its chair, his clear bias towards his friend made that impossible. Instead, Patty would go through the audit committee, led by a board member named Bob Ryan. In the interest of propriety, Patty and Bob also agreed that Jay had the right to hear the evidence against him before it was brought before the board at large. So the morning before the next board meeting was set to take place, May 18th, Bob asked Jay to meet with him one-on-one. As Bob presented Jay with the evidence against him, Jay appeared nonplussed. He acknowledged that he had improperly spoken to Don Kawamoto, but he insisted that the result was a net positive. In Jay's mind, the CNET story was a fantastic article and showed HP in a positive light. Bob reminded Jay that by speaking to Don at all, he had violated the unauthorized disclosure of proprietary information as set out in the company's standards of business conduct. Bob also informed Jay that his future on the HP board would be decided that afternoon. Meanwhile, while Bob talked to Jay, Patty talked to Tom Perkins, hoping to ease him into the idea of what was happening and perhaps avoid triggering his volatile temper. But much to Patty's surprise, Tom didn't react angrily. He listened calmly and took it all in stride. But Tom's serene demeanor was the calm before the storm. The ramifications of what would take place over the next few hours would haunt Patty Dunn and taint her reputation for the rest of her life.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's May 18th, 2006, in the Palo Alto boardroom of HP, just 4 months before Patty Dunn faces a congressional panel on accusations of orchestrating a spying campaign. As HP directors start to assemble for their meeting, Patty can feel the tension in the air. This bland boardroom is usually the venue for lengthy, turgid discussions on market share and business strategy. Today, it feels more like a courtroom. Feeling it best to cut to the chase, an apprehensive Patty announces the first order of business, the conclusion of the Kona 2 leak investigation and its findings. After outlining the facts, Patty gives Jay the floor.
Thank you, Patty. Yes, it is true. I did meet with Don Kawamoto, and we did talk about HP business. However, I did not know our discussion was going to be reported, and I don't feel I've done anything wrong. I am sorry if my actions have caused other members of the board to doubt me. What about the other stories, Jay? The Wall Street Journal? Business Week? That wasn't me, Patty, I swear. I only talked to CNET.
Patty is skeptical, but Tom Perkins is satisfied with his friend's mea culpa.
Well, good. Let's accept this apology and his promise not to do it again and move on. We have more important business to discuss.
But Patty is not ready to close the book on Jay.
Hold on, Tom. I'm not sure we can dismiss the matter quite so quickly. There's a process here we should follow, and I'm not sure I did hear an actual apology. Oh, Patty, why drag this out any further? We've let this take up far too much of our time as it is. I'm sorry, but it's not up to you, Tom. It's up to everyone on the board to have their say now.
But at this, Tom blows his top.
This is ridiculous, Patty. You've already subverted procedure by not going through the governance committee. Now, I'm willing to let that slide. But for God's sake, let's put this thing to bed and move on.
Despite Tom's angry call to move on, Patty insisted that the matter would not be concluded until the whole group expressed their opinion. Jay was dismissed from the room, and for 90 minutes the board quarreled over what steps to take next. The impasse was only broken when the hypothetical was directed at CEO Mark Hurd. He was asked what he would do if a member of his staff had been caught revealing sensitive information. Mark answered that he would have no choice but to fire them, and this reply all but settled the matter. Patty proposed a secret vote. There was little surprise when it came down 6-3 in favor of asking Jay to resign. Tom was furious, with Patty in particular. In Tom's mind, Patty had promised to handle the matter discreetly, to give Jay a gentle reprimand and move on. And now, in his thinking, she had stabbed him in the back. After the vote, Tom angrily shouted, "Patty, you have betrayed me." He accused Patty of railroading the board, bellowing, "A good man is being ruined as a result." Tom concluded his outburst by announcing, "I resign." Tom Perkins immediately snapped his briefcase shut and stormed out of the room. On his way out of the building, he passed a confused Jay Keyworth, who was stunned at the sudden turn of events. Before Tom had even climbed into his $450,000 Porsche parked in the HP parking lot, a motion to accept Tom's resignation had been raised, seconded, and adopted. Patty felt a wave of relief. Tom, the biggest thorn in her side, was gone. And soon, Jay Keyworth would be leaving too. But the drama was far from over. As was his right, Jay returned to the boardroom. And to Patty's dismay, Jay refused to accept the board's vote to have him removed. He insisted it was the shareholders' decision whether he would be dismissed and not theirs. As for Tom Perkins, later that afternoon, one of HP's lawyers would call him to clarify the reason he quit. Federal law dictated that if a board director's resignation was due to a disagreement with the company, then it must be reported to the Securities and Exchange Commission. If it was over a personal matter, then the reason did not need to be disclosed. Tom made his rationale to the HP lawyer clear. It was purely between him and Patty Dunn. In his own words, he could no longer breathe the same air as that woman. The lawyer reported back to the SEC that a disclosure would not be necessary. Patty's relief of Tom and Jay's departure didn't last long. Within a few days of his resignation, Tom headed off to Europe for the unveiling of a $130 million superyacht he was having built in a Turkish shipyard. Before he left the country, Tom sent Patty an email calling on her to resign. The tone of Tom's email riled Patty, but she didn't lose her cool. Even in the heat of a feud, Patty was able to remain composed and be mindful of how to protect herself and HP. Her response was carefully worded. And before sending it, she ran the text of the email by HP's general counsel, Ann Baskins, who approved it. Patty pressed send. In the email, she rejected Tom's call, taking care to remind him that she served at the board's pleasure and only they would determine if she remained or not. But this would not be the last she would hear of Tom Perkins. Even as Tom fussed over the last few details before his multi-million dollar yacht was ready to take to the seas, Tom remained dialed in and obsessed with HP. From Istanbul, Tom fired off a battery of emails directed to Patty, each one more accusatory and threatening than the last. He called into question her leadership and the depth and legality of the Kona investigations. Patty resisted the urge to engage in this email tit-for-tat. Instead, she did not reply, hoping the hot-headed billionaire would eventually come to his senses. But then, on May 29th, Tom sent an email that took their dispute to another level. This time, Tom did not send a message to Patty, but forwarded his retelling of the events that led to his resignation to members of another board that Tom sat on, News Corp, the global media empire owned by Rupert Murdoch. When Patty learned of this, she was furious. Not only did she feel that Tom was playing fast and loose with the truth in his emails, but he was now sharing confidential HP information with a news organization, the very thing that had dragged them all into this mess in the first place. Again, Patty composed a careful reply and made sure to share the contents with HP legal counsel before sending it. But this time, the HP lawyer's response chilled her. They told her not to send the email and to stand down. With Tom involving News Corp, it was only a matter of time before the story of HP's internal strife went public. The best response was no response. But already, one member of the News Corp board was very interested in what Tom had to say. Viet Dinh, a Georgetown University law professor who specialized in corporate governance, privacy, and national security. Previously an assistant attorney general to George W. Bush, the 38-year-old had served as a Republican lawyer in the impeachment trial of Bill Clinton, where he earned a reputation for leaking confidential information to the press and a nickname to match, Viet Spin. Upon learning Tom's story, Viet Dinh expressed shock at HP's leak investigations. Dinh didn't know about the pretexting methods that had been used, and neither did Tom. But in Dinh's mind, the investigation alone was at best a serious invasion of privacy and at worst, potentially criminal. Recognizing the value of Dinh's expertise, Tom quickly put him on retainer. With Dinh's counsel, Tom's subsequent emails took on a more litigious posture. Concerned, Patty reached out to HP's outside counsel, a lawyer named Larry Sensini. Larry assured Patty that she had nothing to worry about. Tom's accusations of illegality were unfounded. Not to mention, the billionaire was beholden to a confidentiality clause that prohibited him from discussing private HP matters even after leaving the board. But that didn't seem to stop Tom from continuing his new line of attack. Tom's persistent emails frequently named Patty Dunn as the chief conductor and architect of the leak investigations. In his emails, Tom demanded that HP launch a formal inquiry into the matter. Patty saw no reason why HP should bend to Tom's wishes, but Larry Sensini disagreed. Spooked by the prospect of News Corp's involvement, Larry reached out to Kevin Hunsaker, the author of the report that pointed blame at Jay Keyworth. Larry instructed Kevin to undertake a new investigation into the legality of Kona 1 and Kona 2. Kevin promptly delivered a 4-page report that categorically debunked Tom's assertions. Larry took great pleasure in relaying that information to Tom Perkins. Patty had hoped that this would be the end of the matter, but again, she would be disappointed. Contained within Larry's reply was the key to a door that would lead Patty Dunn all the way to a criminal indictment. In an email to Tom Perkins, Larry used the term pretexting. It meant nothing to Patty Dunn, or Tom Perkins for that matter, but it was a red flag for Viet Dinh. The issue of pretexting was well known to him, and its usage was already gaining the attention of the nation's lawmaker. At that very moment, more than one anti-pretexting bill was pending in Congress. Dinh advised Tom to contact his phone provider immediately. And soon they confirmed that someone had used Tom's identity back in January in order to open an online account in his name, giving fraudulent access to Tom's personal records. Tom Perkins now had legitimate grounds for an invasion of privacy lawsuit against HP, but the millions of dollars he could inevitably win in a court of law were of no concern to a billionaire. His best friend had been humiliated, and he was forced to resign from a company he loved. Tom wanted revenge.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
It's July 2006, on the patio outside HP CEO Mark Hurd's office in Palo Alto. It's a warm summer's evening as Patty Dunn sits down with Mark for what is supposed to be a convivial dinner. Mark is in good spirits after the release of the latest New York Stock Exchange figures. Since he joined the firm in March of 2005, HP shares have climbed 60% in value. By contrast, their closest rival Dell has seen their shares fall 42%. But Patty doesn't have much of an appetite these days. Since Tom Perkins' resignation at the May board meeting, he's been running a campaign of pressure and intimidation. Mark notices that Patty seems distressed.
Oh, come on, Patty. Let's at least try to celebrate. Mark, I'm not sure you understand what Tom's up to. He's running a very deliberate campaign of disinformation here.
I think you're giving him too much credit, Patty. He's a spoiled child throwing a temper tantrum.
That's more than a temper tantrum. Tom's insisting we change the minutes from the last board meeting, reflecting that he spoke up and questioned the legality of the Kona 2 operation, which is a bold-faced lie. Don't you see what he's doing? He's trying to make it look like he's some kind of whistleblower and we're hiding something. This is serious, Mark.
Well, I'll tell you what, Patty, this is clearly rattling you. So let's get Larry on the phone right now and see what he has to say.
To ease Patty's concern, Mark dials HP's outside legal counsel, Larry Sonsini. Larry has been embroiled in his own battle with Tom over what Larry personally knew about the methodology of Kona 2.
Hey, Larry, it's Mark. I'm here with Patty Dunn. You're on speaker.
Okay. Well, I think I probably know what this is about.
Yeah. What's your feeling about where Tom is going with all this stuff? Patty is worried it's a vendetta.
Well, no. It's all bluster. Look, I've dealt with a million of these venture capital guys, they're all the same. They'll start by throwing their weight around, and then when they see they're getting nowhere, they get bored and they move on.
But that's not how Patty sees the situation.
Hey, Larry, it's Patty. I have to say I disagree. I think Tom is a bully, and I think it's time we fought back. Can we threaten to sue for violating his confidentiality clause?
I think you're taking this too personal, Patty. He's just venting. I recommend letting it go.
Patty sighs with frustration as Mark wraps up the call.
Well, thanks for your time, Larry. Sorry to bother you.
Of course, Mark. That's what I'm here for.
Mark thinks for a moment before he speaks.
Listen, Patty, I agree with Larry. Tom is a nuisance, but he's resigned. So let's just let him rant. This will all go away soon.
Mark, don't ignore him. Tom is not going anywhere.
Patty was right to be concerned about Tom. Unbeknownst to her, that very day, Tom sent an email that was for Mark Hurd's eyes only. In it, Tom offered his support to HP CEO, but he made it clear that he would not back off his allegations against Patty. Tom was clearly trying to win Mark over to his side. But for a time, at least, it seemed Tom's efforts were in vain. At the next HP board meeting, Patty was relieved when Mark and the rest of the directors comprehensively rejected Tom's version of events. But the board's unity against Tom would not deter the stubborn billionaire.
Only days later, Tom emailed every HP director demanding an official, thorough investigation into Kona 1 and Kona 2. Tom also demanded that Patty recuse herself from the process since he believed she was the one responsible for illegal activities. But in Patty's mind, she had nothing to hide. So she encouraged Mark to move forward with an investigation and hopefully put the matter to rest once and for all. Soon, Mark tapped Larry Sensini to carry out an internal review. But Tom didn't stop there. Feeling he had the HP board on its heels, Tom announced he planned to dispute the reason he resigned. Patty was stunned when Tom demanded that HP file a form with the SEC stating that Tom resigned in protest of illegal activities that were carried out under Patty's watch. This completely contradicted his previous stance that he resigned for purely personal reasons. Patty was no fool. She knew exactly what Tom was trying to do. By forcing HP to file with the SEC, Tom would be making the issue a matter of public record, which meant he would have the right to talk about it in the open. And once he had the legal right to speak freely, Patty knew exactly what he would say. He would reframe the conversation to make him look like a moral crusader and Patty like a criminal. Tom was declaring war. Patty knew that to win that war, she needed the rest of the board on her side. So she sat down to write the directors an impassioned plea. In her email, she outlined the differences between her and Tom. Patty pointed out that her by-the-book way of working was an anathema to the tech billionaire who had lived by the maxim, rules were for fools. Patty closed by agreeing with Tom that the legality of HP's Kona investigations should be closely examined. But she also warned the board not to lose sight of Tom's true purpose. This was not about right or wrong. It was about Tom's ego, a way for him to feel satisfied after not getting his way during the Jay Keyworth episode. But as she composed this email to the board, the impending war with Tom wasn't the only struggle on her mind. The very next day, Patty was scheduled for surgery. In the summer of 2006, Patty Dunn's cancer, which had been in remission for some time, aggressively returned. But in her email to the HP directors, there was no call for sympathy. Patty merely hit send, packed a bag, and headed off to a San Francisco medical center. While Patty recuperated from a six-hour operation, Tom's first wave of attacks were already underway. Tom's associates fed rumors to the media, which prompted reporters to flood HP with calls asking for interviews with its under-fire board chairman. Meanwhile, Viet Dinh used his political connections to stir the pot, alerting various state and federal agencies to his clients' allegations against Patty. Within days, the Office of the Attorney General for the State of California announced it was beginning an investigation into the hacking of Tom's phone records. Soon after that, the SEC contacted HP's general counsel, Ann Baskins, giving HP 10 days' notice to respond to Tom's request that HP file a report about his resignation. Patty did not have time to rest or recuperate after her surgery. Within a week, she was back on her feet, ready to defend herself if needed. But Patty still didn't think it would be necessary. Despite the drastic turn of events, Patty felt confident she would be exonerated by Larry Sensini's internal investigation. And indeed, Larry's report did find that neither Patty Dunn nor Mark Hurd were at fault for any wrongdoing. His harshest criticism was reserved for Kevin Hunsaker, the man who oversaw Kona 2. But Patty's innocence would not be reflected in HP's SEC filing about Tom's resignation, something that would inevitably be made public. The filing, generated by HP's legal team, named Patty as the person in charge of Kona 1 and Kona 2. Any blame for pretexting would be laid at her feet. Immediately, Patty went to Mark Hurd and Larry Sensini to protest, but neither would budge on the wording of the SEC filing. Making matters worse, Patty's attention was soon drawn to a document that was being distributed to HP's public relations department. That document was clear in its instruction to HP's PR team that they should respond to media inquiries by stating that Patty knew about the pretexting and that she understood it relied upon identity fraud. Prior to this moment, Patty had felt confident that her interests and the company's were aligned. But after the SEC filing and the PR memo, that confidence had all but evaporated, replaced by a nagging suspicion that she was being set up. For the first time since the ordeal began, Patty felt alone and isolated, forced to consider the unfortunate possibility that Tom was not her only enemy, that her fellow directors were not on her side. In fact, they were actively working to make her a patsy. From Wondery, this is episode 3 of the HP spying scandal for Business Movers. On the next episode,
Patty Dunn finds herself in the crosshairs of the media, Washington politicians, and the criminal justice system.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Business Movers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you'd like to learn more about the Hewlett-Packard spying scandal, we recommend The Big Lie, Spying, Scandal, and Ethical Collapse at Hewlett-Packard by Anthony Bianco, Comebacks by Andrea Redmond and Patricia Crisafulli, and The Kona Files by James Stewart, an article in the February 2007 issue of The New Yorker. A quick note about our dramatizations. In most cases, we can't know everything that happened, but all our reenactments are based on historical research. Business Movers is hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham, for Airship. Audio editing by Molly Bach. Sound design by Derek Behrens. Music by Lindsey Graham. This episode is written and researched by Ayad Andrews. Executive producers are Stephen Walters for Airship and Jenny Lauer Beckman and Marsha Louie for Wondery.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect forever.